How would you like to go to the top of the world? If that sounds appealing, you're not alone. Conquering the world's highest peaks has become an increasingly popular activity for professional adventurers and well-heeled amateurs alike. And helping climbers get there has become big business, as described in the new book, Everest Inc., The Renegades and Rogues Who Built an Industry at the Top of the World, by Will Cockrell. Will is an editor and writer who's worked for national magazines including Men's Journal, Outside, Men's Fitness, and GQ. Here he is to share the key insights from his book.
Hey everyone, Will Cockrell here, author of the book Everest Inc., The Renegades and Rogues Who Built an Industry at the Top of the World. Everest Inc. is not only a history of guided climbing on the tallest mountain on Earth, but also a stark counter-narrative to the stories we hear year after year as amateurs attempt to climb it in droves. I had a lot of fun writing this book. I've been a climber and mountaineer myself for 30-plus years, basically my entire adult life. However, I wouldn't call myself elite by any stretch, and I found myself approaching the project more as a regular Joe than as a climber. I've also been covering Mount Everest, climbing, and adventure in general as a journalist for a couple decades, and I think that's what allowed me to spot this glaring omission in the Everest story, the rise of the guiding industry. When I say ignored, it's not that it hasn't been written about, it's that no one has stepped back and examined how on earth a guiding industry was even possible on Mount Everest. The high-profile tragedies and triumphs on the mountain are interesting, but man, knowing how we got here in the first place will totally change your perspective on those events. The most important insights you'll get from reading Everest Inc. won't necessarily be in the form of for or against. Instead, I focused on something simpler and, in my opinion, far more interesting. How a mountain that was once considered unclimbable, later downgraded to suicidal, became one that thousands of people could climb relatively safely. These are the key insights that helped me better understand Everest and the people who climb it today. Insight number one, the first ascent of Mount Everest was an important milestone, but it was the 174th ascent that sealed its destiny. In climbing and mountaineering, first ascents are a big deal, perhaps the biggest deal. On Everest, however, it was a far bigger deal when in 1985, a wealthy oil man and ski resort owner named Dick Bass, a self-described amateur climber, was helped to the summit and backed down safely by a well-known elite mountaineer named David Brashears. While no money was exchanged between Bass and Brashears for this climb, Dick Bass loved to crow about how his tenacity far outweighed his experience. When Bass appeared on The Tonight Show a couple weeks after he summited for becoming the first person to climb the seven summits, the highest point on each continent, tens of millions of people learned that night that tenacity alone could get you to the summit. They weren't wrong. What we also learned from Dick Bass is that the dream to stand atop Everest was never really exclusive to climbers. Turns out, all sorts of people from all sorts of walks of life had pictured themselves on that summit. Bass's friend Frank Wells, for example, he was the CEO of Warner Brothers and later Disney, also an amateur climber, and was attempting the mountain at the same time. And I'd argue that since it wasn't just climbers who had this dream, once Bass had climbed it, the challenge no longer belonged to climbers. Elite mountaineers look up at a mountain and dream of doing its most difficult line within their ability. Most non-climbers feel a mountain like Everest will be plenty hard without self-imposed handicaps and are just looking for the best, easiest, and safest way up. And it turns out there was an easy way up Everest with a guide. Insight number two. The guiding era on Mount Everest is a blip not only in the history of mountaineering, but the history of guided climbing on any mountain. The guiding industry on Everest is technically only 34 years old, about the same age as the song, You Can't Touch This. Mountain guiding goes all the way back to the 19th century. It wasn't until the 1990s, though, that a guiding company advertised a guided Everest climb. And it wasn't until 1992 that paying client climbers finally stepped on the summit with the help of guides. 7 clients, to be exact. Clients that year included a bar owner from Alaska and a couple high-flying investment bankers. Now, one of the reasons this matters in understanding Everest today is that by the time writer John Krakauer got caught up in that ferocious and deadly storm in 1996, it was an industry in its infancy, and not, as so many believe from reading Krakauer's mega-famous book, Into Thin Air, the culmination of many years of bad decision-making and poor judgment. Don't get me wrong, that tragedy, in which 8 climbers who were part of a guided expedition died, was the result of poor judgment. But so many of the public's opinions, biases, and ire toward the guiding industry on Everest was seeded by that one powerful book. And the industry's reputation never really recovered from it. Interestingly, after the release of Into Thin Air, business boomed. The perceived risk and the prospect of death actually amped up the allure of the challenge. But if you did come to climb Everest after 1996, you would almost certainly be judged through the Into Thin Air lens. Insight number 3. Sherpa climbers had never guided anyone on Everest until about 20 years ago. This is a sticky one. The ethnic Sherpas of Nepal, the community of people who live in the foothills of the Himalaya, are known to have a higher red blood cell count and are known for their strength and stamina at altitudes that crush most Westerners. A Sherpa workforce has also been the backbone of the industry and props up the entire infrastructure. Sherpas have even ushered hundreds of Westerners to the summit, often while carrying their client's backpack. But it's one of the biggest myths about Everest expeditions that Westerners were regularly being guided to the summit by Sherpa climbers who were just not being given credit for their effort. You often hear people say that Tenzing Norgay guided Edmund Hillary to the summit in 1953 during the first ascent. But the role of a trained mountain guide, and this is life or death important on a mountain like Everest, is largely to save lives when things go wrong. Broken bones in the death zone, avoiding avalanches, crevasse rescues, these all require a highly technical skill set. Sherpa climbers and employees of the guiding companies simply did not begin seeking out this training until about 2005, and it has been a slow process. However, things have turned a corner. Currently, there are more fully trained Nepali guides operating on Everest today than there are Western guides. Insight 4. Guided climbing in the Himalaya is officially no longer a Western industry, nor are Westerners leading the way. It would be fair to say that climbing and guiding Himalayan peaks, including Everest, was a Western idea. Nepalis see the mountains as gods and goddesses, and especially older Sherpas prefer to stay off of them. It's also fair to say that Western guides created the guiding industry. But here's what's so fascinating today. There are roughly double the number of Nepali guides and guide companies on Everest right now than there are Western guides. The main reason for this? Sherpas fell in love with climbing. You probably would too if climbing Everest was no harder than going for a really long hike. It has been incredibly reductionist to say that the Sherpas climb these mountains because they have to. The idea that a Nepali would only work on Everest under dire circumstances to feed their family is very outdated. As the industry grew, so did the wealth in the Khumbu Valley. The Sherpa people are such savvy and shrewd business people. Today, this is one of the most prosperous regions in a very poor country because of the trekking and climbing industries. I hiked through the Khumbu to reach Everest Base Camp in 2022 and was surprised by the sense of community around the industry. Many Sherpa families are now sending their children to be schooled in Kathmandu and abroad, and this younger generation is full of engineers, pilots, and entrepreneurs. But because of their early exposure to mountaineering, many Sherpas of this generation also discovered climbing for fun, and mountaineering is now a huge and celebrated part of Nepali culture. Nepalis have an enormous amount of pride for the role their country has played in mountaineering history. Rightfully so, and many Nepalis are achieving fame and fortune far beyond what any Western guide or climber ever achieved through the Everest guiding industry. Insight number 5, and this one may change your perspective the most. Even today in 2024, sharing the summit of Mount Everest with a large crowd is totally optional. In 2019, newspapers all over the world published that shocking photo showing dozens of bubble-suited climbers stuck in a horrific traffic jam on the final ridge to the summit. This was in the death zone, where time is your worst enemy. By some accounts, it took people 2 hours to cover a distance that normally takes less than an hour. Whenever we see photos or video taken from the summit, they often show a small crowd jostling for space to take a selfie. Don't get me wrong, Everest is a really crowded mountain. And getting stuck in that traffic jam people saw in 2019 has happened again in the following seasons. Basically, always during the first good weather window. Here's the thing, there is very rarely only one good weather window. In fact, there are often two or three. During my interviews with Everest guides from all over the world, at least two Western guides, a woman from New Zealand and a man from the US, both told me they walked onto the summit of Everest the same year that photo was taken, and they and their clients had it all to themselves. Imperfect weather. Few realize that this initial dash for the top is a far more calculated and intentional move than people think. One of the things that characterizes many modern-day guided Everest expeditions is a desire to go for the top during the first weather window, which is defined by a super predictable 5-day outlook. This is largely a strategy of the Nepali companies, who have far more clients to manage than the Western companies, and who have a far more business-minded approach to making clients happy. The possibility of there only being one weather window in an Everest season is unlikely. Nevertheless, it haunts client climbers like you wouldn't believe, and many push to go for it as soon as it's humanly possible. Thanks so much for your interest in this story. I hope you enjoy reading the book as much as I did writing it.
Thank you, Will. That was 5 big ideas from Everest Inc., the renegades and rogues who built an industry at the top of the world, by Will Cockrell. I'm Michael Kovnat. Have a great day.